Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Matt Ennis, Brad Gunning.
Song dedicated to the 2024 Toronto Blue Jays offense as of right now.
Yeah, Hello Darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, that's the joke. Yeah, I know. I'm McBain. I know.
I got the joke, yeah.
That's the joke.
So, talking about baseball, being a baseball analyst, just having smart baseball opinions.
Oh, okay. I was like, I'm a baseball analyst?
Having smart baseball opinions is not difficult, but like it's nuanced, and you have to add the appropriate caveats. They go without saying. Okay,
a lot of coaches need, like, in baseball talk.
We almost need like a disclaimer before any conversation. Like, of course, it's only 7 games, and yeah, the Astros are 2-5. Okay, and the Blue Jays are 3-4, and a 5-5 road trip is just fine and dandy.
You know, this is like the old Louis C.K., like, of course, but maybe. It's like, of course, all of those things, but maybe.
Yeah, but not all 3-4 records are built the same way, and not all narratives early season-wise are the same. And when you bring back the same cast of characters, and the big problem you had over 162 games is an even bigger problem in the first 7, to the tune of being the first team in Major League history to be both no-hit and one-hit over the first 7 games of a regular season. Yeah, like the takes are a little spicy, okay?
Yeah, they're allowed to be.
Yeah, totally permitted. Let's talk to our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Here is a smart baseball man, Ben Nicholson-Smith at the At the Letters podcast. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing okay. So, yeah.
A little angsty, to be perfectly honest.
55 more of those bad boys. Okay. So yeah, understood. Lots can change. Lots can change tomorrow. Like by Monday, we could be talking about, okay, there it is. There's the offensive game plan that we thought. There's Don Mattingly doing his work, yada, 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 yada. But Ben, you've been around this game a lot. Like that's quite something to put forth that offensive performance, not just in all 3 games in the Astros series and the 2 losses in Tampa. Is there anything more than early season blip to be taken away from that?
Well, if it's an early season blip, it's a pretty notable and pretty painful one. So, you know, to that end, I don't even know if you would put it down as a blip. I think after 1 game, right, when they were no hit by Blanco, throwing just the game of his life.
Yeah,
sure. You know, it's baseball. Weird stuff happens all the time. But then, okay, then you're facing Fromber and, you know, he does his thing. Then it's like, all right, that's not great. And then all of a sudden you go out there and Christian Javier is just like shutting you down. You get one hit for the second time in 3 days. Like at a certain point, you're just not doing your job. And your job is to, you know, produce runs against major league pitching. They're not doing that. It doesn't mean they won't. It doesn't mean they're doomed to fail. But certainly they're not giving us a lot of reason to believe that this year's team is different than last year. So, you know, we're kind of in neutral in some ways where you're kind of sitting there like, all right, which way is this going to go? But, you know, it certainly looks like it's going to go one way. And that's not a fun indicator at this point, even if we all understand that there's a lot of time left.
Yeah, no, it's not a remotely fun indicator. It's actually a lot like when I see like the check engine light come on in my car. It doesn't mean we're doomed, but it could be very, very bad. In terms of what we've seen, like there was a lot of talk of a new approach, and boy, the conversations we had after game one of the season have been very different here. How long do you think? And this isn't the annual. How long before we can have wide sweeping? You know, opinions on this team, and it's no longer early. But if there is a new approach or a different approach, how long do we need to give it to kind of take hold here or see enough things that are different? Because, man, again, like, I don't need to state the numbers again of how dreadful the offense has been outside of those 2 games against the Rays, but how long do you need to kind of give a new approach to take hold or to see it pay dividends if it exists at all?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. Baseball offensively, like, it's such a nuanced thing, right? And, you know, approach can be so different from game to game, hitter to hitter. Like, even in a different count, Vladdy's approach is going to be a little different on 3-0 than it is on 1-2. So approach in baseball is such a nuanced thing, and it should be and always will be, and that's the case on good teams, and that's the case on bad teams. I don't think that there's one unified approach that the Blue Jays have that is at fault for why they're not hitting. I really don't think that that's the case. It's not a philosophical thing, mm-hmm. just a matter of executing. And, you know, at a certain point, you've got to execute. They all know intellectually and academically what pitches they should be swinging at, right? You swing at the strikes, you let the balls go. Everyone knows that. But it's hard to execute. It's incredibly hard to do that in real time when you have to react and there's no thinking to be done when you're facing 95 or you're facing a nasty changeup. So it's really a matter of execution. I don't think it's a matter of philosophy. It's a matter of getting it done when you're in there in that batter's box.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would say for the top four guys in the order, it's like, yeah, those guys are going to be better. There's just no question. Like, a big part of what we're talking about here is those guys getting off the slow starts, which is that is just randomness of a season. Say what you will about Vlad, and I have. Like, he's not a, you know, 500 OPS guy. Neither is Bo Bichette, and neither is George Springer. Those guys are going to hit. I will say, though, that, like, the 5-9 guys, especially if David Schneider's not in there, like, I do have my questions. I had my questions going into this season. Those have only been more reinforced, Ben. Like, that's the deal, right? Like, you can sell me on it's an early season 7-game sample, and, boy, it's never going to be as bad as this. And you're right. Again, top four guys. Those guys are still good. More than half of the lineup, though, there's a lot of questions about how much offense they can expect out of not even the bottom of the order, like the back half of the order.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think you're right to say that nothing that we've seen so far would answer those questions in any kind of an encouraging way for the Blue Jays, right? You look at Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, he's got 4 singles. You look at Ernie Clement, he's chasing, he's expanding, he's not doing what you'd want to see. Kevin Kiermaier's essentially done nothing offensively for this team. Dalton Varsho, really quiet at the plate. Kirk, I would tend to say that we have a strong, you know, track record with Kirk where you kind of know he's going to hit to some extent. But I mean, I really believe that. You know, I'm not saying he's going to win a Silver Slugger again, but yeah, he can do some things. But yeah, you know, there's the bottom of the order hasn't done anything to say, hey, this is going to be different, nor has the top. So you're really looking at a collection of hitters. They're averaging, you know, around 3 runs per game, nowhere near enough to be a consistent competitive team in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. Nothing's really going well offensively for this group. I mean, that's putting it mildly.
Yeah, Justin Turner's been okay. But yeah, and David Schneider, when he's allowed to play, has been very good. So I've been bearing the lead. It's a bad job by me, only 10 minutes into this segment.
I avoided asking you with my first question because I wanted to cede ground to you. And here you are, 10 minutes in, not having yelled at Ben about this.
Here's the thing. Let me, again, reset the, because I feel like, you know, my take has been, it's been extrapolated and expanded over time. And, like, I don't think David Schneider is on the verge of being the best player in baseball or an MVP candidate or anything. I think he's shown the ability, both in his minor league career and his very brief major league career, to get into good hitters' counts, take walks, and when he gets mistakes, punish them, hit home runs, which on this team, in this lineup, seems like a valuable asset to have. And especially considering, again, the bottom half of this lineup. He has what at the end of the season, we might look at that home run off Josh Hader as like one of the best moments this team has had. Like, and that's not to say that there's horrible days to come. That was incredible. They're down to their last out and down 1-0, and David Schneider hit a 2-run home run off one of the best relievers in the sport. And I understand the argument that John Schneider's making and his laptop that tells him top of the zone fastballs coming out of the hand of Christian Javier, and David Schneider's not hitting an 8-run home run yesterday to change the fortunes of the game. I mean, it's a little insane to me. Again, part of it is that it's David Schneider, a guy that I believe in to a certain extent, and part of it is like the guy he'd be replacing in the lineup, that we don't see him in yesterday's game, Ben. That's as nuanced as I can have as far as a take on that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that anyone who's saying David Schneider should be in the lineup, like, that's a reasonable take. He hit a home run the night before. You need the offense that you can get. He's been really good as a major league hitter and certainly was really good in the minor leagues last year too. So you're looking at a guy who's just produced really consistently. So I see that take. I actually agree with it. I think that he should have been in the lineup.
Don't say actually, like, as if you don't agree with any of my takes.
No. Yeah. Hold your ground. Say actually.
Well, I mean, yeah, the words are out there, so everyone heard it now. But I think, you know, basically
people don't forget.
At the same time, like, I think that if you've decided that David Schneider is something less than an everyday player, which I think is also reasonable. I mean, this is not Mike Trout here.
Yeah.
So if you've decided that he's something less than an everyday player, he's not going to play every single day, then I can get the case that, all right, Javier is a guy who, as you said, Ben, pounds the top of the zone. This is really not a good matchup. David Schneider, very open about the fact that he's not good against high fastballs. So, you know, I could see, all right, yesterday, maybe that is the day that you give him a rest and you get him back in against Stroman, who, as we all know, is a guy who throws down in the zone. So, you know, tomorrow in New York against Stroman, that's probably a really good chance to get him in. If he's not there then maybe you have then we really have a discussion to be had here. But yesterday, again, I would have started him, but I don't think it's egregious not to.
Yeah, I like, we all understand the baseball argument, but there's also like some team aspect of it as well. Again, like the guy just hit, to Ben's point, like the Jays could have a successful season, and that is still a Mount Rushmore moment that we think back, especially from the regular season part of it. The other thing that I think is so interesting about all of this and the Schneider discourse is, and I understand part of it is they're getting asked very pointed questions about why he's not playing when he's playing, but it seems to me that they are going over and above and beyond to outlay the flaws of this player. I mean, Dalton Varsho certainly has some flaws to his swing, and we don't hear them.
He kills upper zone fastballs.
We don't hear them coming out from the rafters and saying, here's all the pitchers that Dalton Varsho is going to struggle against. And yeah, is it easy to pick on him because of the Moreno trade? But is it not jarring to you how open, honest, and quite honestly, loudly they are talking about this player's flaws? It just seems such a stark departure from how they kind of talk about other guys on the roster and in the lineup specifically.
Well, I'll say this as a media member. Like, I appreciate the transparency. If we're asking John Schneider questions, like yesterday, you know, I'm in there, I'm asking him about, you know, his playing time decisions, how this is unfolding, right? So what do I want? Do I want him to protect his players at all costs and never say anything bad about them? Or do I want honesty? Mm-hmm. For me, I want honesty. I think that's what fans want. So I have no problem with him acknowledging that David Schneider has some trouble with pitches up in the zone. But I will say this as well, because, you know, both you guys mentioned that, you know, possibility that this is one of the best moments of the season. And man, if we're looking back at this in 6 months' time, early April in Houston, and we're talking about the David Schneider home run off Josh Hader as one of the top four moments of the season, that's a bad year. Like, in my opinion, they need to do so much more than this. Like, yeah, please go clip it. Go for it. Like, it's that you got to do so much better. This is the Vlad and Bo era. This is the team that's supposed to be winning playoff games. We shouldn't be talking about a bench player, a part-time player.
Vlad and Bo and Babe.
Yeah, you got to do more than that.
I mean, he authored the best moment of last season. Like, I don't know if there's any.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with you there.
It was later in the season, but it was an irrelevant series against a Boston Red Sox team that had packed up and gone home, seemingly. Yeah.
Last year was a bad year.
Yeah, they won 89 games and made the playoffs, right? Like,
last year was a bad year.
I agree. I mean, not compared to the Yankee season or the Mets season or lots of other teams. Yep. But yeah, no, I agree it was a bad year. I mean, you can't even help yourself in calling him a bench player, right? Like, and maybe that's the way it is. I don't discount the possibility that Davis Schneider is not an everyday player. But at a certain point, like, honestly, I do get to the point where I'm like, oh, well, pedigree matters so much. Like, it's not a meritocracy. We're not talking about the great thing I thought about sports was like, it doesn't matter where you're from, where you were drafted, how much money you're making, you perform, you play. And it's not, listen, 40 games is not 162, but at a certain point here, like, that is part of my frustration as well, Ben. Like, maybe he can't play. Like, maybe he, like, righties are his kryptonite, and, you know, he's going to be exposed to it's such an incredible degree that he's not even a bench player. Maybe he's a minor league player. Can I see it? Can you let it play out? And again, like, what is the risk? Oh, no, we're going to miss out on a couple of weeks of seeing Kevin Biggio or Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. It's just insane to me that this is not the point where we're, like, letting it play out.
Yeah, honestly, like, I think that's pretty fair. I think that, you know, again, I don't think he's earned the right to be in there 7 days a week. So I'm fine with him getting the occasional day off. But I do think he should get some run. And even as they're about to face if you look at the probables for the Yankees and the Mariners, it's all right-handed pitching. So to me, that's not an excuse to put him on the bench. You know, when I say bench player, I'm describing what he's been to this point in his career. It's not a death sentence.
Right.
You know, certainly there's room for him to prove that he's more than that. And you need to look no further than Justin Turner for a guy who broke out late in his 20s, defied a bunch of odds, and ended up having a great career. Same right. with Max Muncy. Now, I'm not putting Muncy or Turner on David Schneider, but to your point, that is kind of the best case scenario. That's the ceiling. He's a legit everyday player who hits from the right side and probably isn't, you know, an elite defender, but is someone who can hold his own at a few different spots. So that's the best case for David Schneider. Now, even if he's short of that and he's able to go out there and, you know, he's a 110 WRC plus player who can, like, he's not a great defender, right? But if he can sort of hold his own defensively, then you're fine with that. And that probably does warrant a 5 day a week run. And so you can use some combination of Kiermaier, IKF, and Biggio, take them each out of the lineup, put Schneider in one extra day, and then all of a sudden he's getting 4 days a week. And I think at this point, if he's in there, you know, 3 days a week, that's fine. 4 days a week, that's fine. I don't think it has to be more than that, personally.
I just like to go on record, based on the facial expressions he's making, as the person across the table from me would like to see it more than sure. 3 to 4
yeah,
days.
That's fair. Yeah.
The other thing that I think because of the offense's struggles, that we've kind of skirted past a little bit of this. I don't want to overstate it. Part of this, I do think, is early season. You don't want to make too big a sweeping overreactions. Blue Jays defense has been kind of boom or bust. Like, we've seen great plays, guys getting gunned out, but we've also seen kind of the routine sloppy stuff. I mean, some of it is the Kirk play in the Houston game the other night. I mean, he throws out Altuve, so you have to give him credit there. He also gives up second base by not paying attention. Where are we at on the Blue Jays in terms of, you know, we can sit here and have all the Davis Schneider arguments we want until we're blue in the face. I think this team is going to win. If they're going to win a lot of games, it's going to be because of pitching and defense. Where are we at on the defensive aspect of the Blue Jays and how they kind of look through the first 7 games?
I think they've had their moments. Like anything, it's, you know, small sample this time of year. I thought Dalton Varsho's sliding catch in left field with mm-hmm. Bobichette running at him was just spectacular. I mean, that's a play that very few left fielders make. I think Kirk has had some good moments and some bad moments. At the same time, he's shouldering a huge load with Danny Jansen injured. So, you know, Kirk's been okay. I think that, you know, Bichette obviously has been dealing with the neck thing. I think, incidentally, I don't know if you guys have any takes on this, but just watching Jeremy Peña play short, wow, is he ever good. Like, he might be the best shortstop in the American League defensively. But, I think the Jays have been fine defensively. You know, they've made a couple mistakes, but I think they've been fine.
Yeah. They've been so fine, and there's so many good defenders that, like, maybe you can take one out and put a guy in that, like, he swings a bat better than he uses a glove. God, if David Schneider should have really worked on his defense a little bit better, a little bit more, you know, throughout the course of his professional career, because, yeah, then it would be unassailable, but I digress. Anywho, Ben, thank you for doing this and also, like, responding to my texts, because you don't have to do that. Like, that's really nice. Like, I needed a place to vent, and you were my sounding board. I appreciate that.
I'd also like to thank you for that, because then I didn't have to field them. So good job by you, Ben.
You know what? You can consider me your baseball text hotline anytime. happy to chat via text or call.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Enjoy the Bronx.
Thanks, guys.
So, yeah, there's Ben Nicholson-Smith. At the letters Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. And he was our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I think ultimately that's the thing that is belying my entire anger. I mean, it's multifold, right? Like, it's multi-pronged. Like, there's lots of tentacles.
It's an octopus of anger.
Yeah. And
I wish that was alliteration. An orangutan, they just got the two arms, though.
So David Schneider hits. This team doesn't hit. And so, like, that's obviously the number one reason. I'm like, why isn't he playing?
Don't score any runs. That guy runs into one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ultimately, and the other thing is, like, John Schneider, the manager, is not, like, it's not even a gut feel thing. It's just, like, a brain thing, like, over a laptop thing. That's part of it. But the overriding thing is what I said to Ben there: sports, meritocracy. It's great. It's like you can have your bonus baby first round pick that you, like, give every opportunity to.
Yeah.
and maybe that's unfair, and like that allows them, like Spencer Torkelson, first overall selection in Detroit, like he kind of stinks, but like he gets run out there every day because they're like, well,
what are we gonna do?
Yeah, you gotta be good, like, and he's starting to sort of kind of figure it out. And if it was some other, you know, guy playing that position, first base, and he had the offensive production that he has, he wouldn't get those opportunities. But like ultimately, it doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, how much money you make, where you were drafted. If you produce, and Davis Schneider is the embodiment of that because he's in the major leagues right now, nobody has anything invested in this guy. And he's only arrived because of his performance in the minor leagues and only on this roster because of his performance at the major leagues. And like, we can talk about long samples, and we can't evaluate Vlad now. We have to wait until the whole season plays out. Guess who didn't have the luxury of that? Davis Schneider.
Yes.
Davis Schneider, when he arrived, if he didn't perform, like, obviously it was an extreme case, the incredible start that he had, but how many starts does he get if he doesn't hit a home run in his first game? Or like, whatever it was, two home runs in that series. Like, he could already be over, and maybe he never gets another shot. I thought we lived in a society. Like, I thought we watched sports with the same understanding. You perform, you play. Like, what are we doing here, man? Like, and it's not the biggest sample, but it's not a three-game series at Fenway anymore. Like, we're going on 40 games, and we're now separating the two starts he's had this year from the entirety of last season and an offseason. Like, I just, that's the part that gets me, because it's part of the reason why I love sports is because you got stories like this, and like ultimately nobody can stop David Schneider if he keeps performing. Apparently you can, though.
It's so funny to me because I agree with everything, but I actually look at it from the flip side. I'm like, who is the bonus baby that is being protected? It's like, I know you paid Kiner Falefa and you have some investment in Biggio.
No, yeah, those like
the Kiner Falefa,
the name brand of Kevin Biggio, and Isaiah Kiner Falefa. Money.
No, that part. It's like that. Yes, that's the thing I can't get behind, though, is that I would understand if Davis Schneider was just a left fielder and he was never allowed to play anywhere else in the world, I would kind of be able to, I would still be livid by it, but I could at least understand the idea of, we traded our best prospect for this guy. He has to play. He has to get burned in Varsho. But it's not a one-to-one. It's Kevin Biggio. It's Kiner Falefa, who, yes, they paid money to, and there's a literal, what is it, $10 million or $9 million investment in the player, but there's no investment beyond this year. This is not some piece of the Blue Jays' future, and maybe David Schneider's not either, but he is a piece of the present, and that's the... So I agree with you, but I could even look past the meritocracy thing if there were these tentpole players. Like, if David Schneider was trying to steal Bo's job, then it's a very different conversation. If he was trying to steal Kevin Kiermaier's job, it'd be a different conversation, but he's not even trying to do that. It's Kevin Biggio, it's Kiner Falefa. So it's not so much about the meritocracy isn't working for him. It's what is the, who, where's the ivory tower that he's up against that he can't possibly overcome? That's the, like, we're on the same lane in this, but the opposite sides of it are what's driving us nuts.
And you know who should know and should feel that pain and should understand exactly what we're talking about?
I don't know where you're going with this.
The manager.
Yes.
Who spent his entire professional baseball career in the Blue Jays minor league system. And he didn't perform at the minor leagues, and as a result, never got his shot at the major leagues. Not even for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't sit on a major league bench as a player.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But he, I'm sure, looked around him and saw guys grinding and saw the frustration guys had trying to make their dreams become a reality. And to, man, again, like, just from the outside looking in, treat this so callously and so by the numbers and so laptop-y is making me want to throw my laptop.
So again, like, we can make this about the Schneiders, but I just refuse to believe it's not also a little bit an organizational thing. It has to be.
Yeah, but this is a great organizational story.
I wholeheartedly agree. It's just the angst with this. I'm not saying the bulk of it can't go to John Schneider. It just can't stop there, because I refuse to believe that he is doing this without at least the thought that My bosses really want me to do this other thing. I refuse to believe that that isn't at least entering the equation.
Sure, sure. Again, like I said, though, earlier on in the program, that's all well and good, and you want to make your bosses happy.
Mm-hmm. Winning games doesn't
matter.
It
doesn't matter how much your bosses enjoy your process. If you lose, mm-hmm. you're going to be the sacrificial lamb. You're going to be thrown overboard. So better at some point try and save your job and do what you think is in the best interest of your baseball team for winning, you know, today.
Yeah.
Not today, because this is an off day. Tomorrow. Yeah. Against Marcus Stroman, who throws with his right hand. Ben Nicholson-Smith is right. Oh, Marcus Stroman throws with his right hand, but not known necessarily for the high fastball. He's known for ground ball artist. Yeah, it's hard to imagine me being more upset tomorrow, but like, yeah, if David Schneider's on the line of Yankee Stadium,
is it bad for the show, but good for me that there's a very real possibility that we're like 72 hours removed from you finding out about that decision from when we get to a mic again?
Yeah.
Like, for me, again, bad for the show, good for me personally.
We'll see. All right. Take a deep breath, take a little time off, and then we'll come back and we'll talk to Luke Gazdick. Hockey Central analyst.
If that doesn't get you feeling good, like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I love talking to Luke.
Yeah, see if he's ever been in a line brawl off the opening draw.
I was actually going to say, like, if there's ever a guy that you feel like would be riding the hardest for Davis Schneider in the world, I feel like Luke Gazdick would be right there.
No kidding. Maybe we'll talk to him about that.
I mean, he is a Canadian former hockey player. Chances are he has some Jays takes.
Yep. Luke Gazdick next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, that's got to be exhausting. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Yeah, the story in the sports world yesterday was the opening faceoff at MSG, Rangers and Devils, and all five players on both teams grabbing a partner and chucking knuckles. And it actually being a pretty good hockey game as well.
Yeah,
unfortunately for the Devils, they're done. They're cooked because they lost in regulation. They basically had to run the table. But yeah, Matt Rempe, like the storybook season, I guess, that you would consider.
Yes.
His rookie season at MSG, it continues with yesterday's performance. Let's talk to Luke Gazdick. Hockey Central analyst for Sportsnet, host of the Mitzoff podcast. How's it going, Luke?
Good, guys. How you doing?
How'd you like that yesterday?
That was awesome.
Yes, it was. Correct. Correct take.
Also,
good answer.
Also, that was unreal leading me in with D12. I haven't heard that song in forever. No, that was... Listen, I know like the whole fighting thing is, I don't want to say a little iffy these days in hockey, but that's just, to me, that was pure, like electric, like it's at the Garden. Travis Green has the chance to put in his lineup first, visiting team on the road, and Laviolette matches it. It was unreal. Like I was watching the Leaf game at the time, and so I didn't see it live, but obviously then it started exploding all over, and watched it back a couple times. Some great tilts in there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Rempe McDermott is the main event there, but yeah, plenty of good undercards. Miller getting involved as well, and I'm sure you've seen it now, the overhead shot of all the guys kind of figuring out their dance partners. It is so good. Have you ever been in something like that? What's the closest thing to a line brawl you've been a part of? And man, again, like we wouldn't want this if it happened every week in the NHL, but God, once a year, twice a year, I don't know, maybe three if I want to get greedy. Like it does feel kind of perfect, but what's the closest to a situation like that you've ever been a part of?
No, I think you're so right on that last point too, is I don't think we want to see this every single weekend or whatever it is, but every now and then, keep the fans in their seats. That's good stuff. Honestly, I've never been a part of anything like that, like off the opening puck drop. Certainly in the American League earlier in my career, we had a couple dust ups where everyone just grabs a partner. We had an absolute rivalry with this team, St. Louis's team from Peoria, which if you've ever been to Peoria,
have not.
Just don't go. It's a tough place to play. I don't know if you ever had plans to, but yeah, we had some absolute dust ups with them, and playing San Antonio and Houston 12 times a year. So we had some doozies, but nothing like that off the opening puck drop. I did scrap Curtis McDermott a fair amount of times towards the end of my career. He was in AHL Ontario, which is LA's team, and I was with San Diego. We played them 14 times in the last year I played them. So me and Curtis had a couple great scraps. And I don't miss that too much, to be honest.
God, 14 times. What a schedule.
Yeah, I know that's your job, but that just seems not overly fun. I got to be honest.
I think at the time there was tons of adrenaline going through, but honestly, towards the end of my career, I got real tired of it. Yeah. Getting asked by, you know, a lot of younger players, just like I was earlier in my career. But I was just kind of over it after a certain amount. But yeah, I said it was 14. I say that because it was 16. It might have been more, but we played in the Pacific Division. We only had, I think we had 8 teams in our division, but Ontario was closest one. They were an hour and 15 minutes down the highway from San Diego. So it was either 14 or 16 times we played them, and they were a nightmare. And McDermott would run around every game. So I think we ended up fighting 2 or 3 times that one year.
Yeah, I'm just watching them right now. You certainly both got your money's worth there. You mentioned how tired you got out of it. How was that going to go for Rempe? I mean, you come in shot out of a cannon like he is, and you eventually get to a point where you don't have to take 100 scraps a year. But how, like, has Rempe already kind of proven his mettle? I would think so, seeing as how he's kind of taken on all comers. McDermott was the first guy he kind of strayed away from and then obviously answered the bell this time. How does that work for a guy like Rempe? I mean, he's come in, he's been shot out of a cannon. It feels like he's fighting every other night. You can't do that for forever. Has he established enough of a rep now kind of going into next year where he's going to be fighting way, way less, and it's almost more like the dance card we see for Ryan Reeves as opposed to somebody like Rempe this year?
Yeah, I think he's definitely gained some respect around the league, especially with some of the heavier guys. And I know you mentioned it, but man, I had a similar career path coming in. I was 23 years old going into Edmonton as a rookie. I fought, I think, 10 times before Christmas. Ended up leading the league in fights as a rookie. I think I had 17 or 18. But it gets to the point where, especially after your rookie year or your first go at it, where you eventually get to choose your spots and you all eliminate like tons of the guys that aren't heavyweights. So any of like the light, even light heavies, but especially like the middleweight guys that will sometimes fight out of their weight class. If you continue to do what he's doing, those guys won't want any piece of you. So you eliminate like a number of categories of guys. And I think you really get to do it on your own terms. And that used to be a thing that coaches would say to me a lot, especially after I got through this initial phase of like going after every tough guy. Coaches would say it's on your terms. It's on our terms, especially picking spots, whether it's at home and looking at the scoreboard and who your opponent is and what spot you are in the season. There's so many factors that go into, you know, accepting a fight or even, you know, during the pace of play, knowing whether you should be looking for that or not. I think him especially has earned that pretty much already, that he can start to kind of call his own shots.
Tanner Jeannot was looking for it yesterday against Ryan Reeves, which is also a great scrap. And boy, Ryan Reeves in recent games has kind of solidified himself, I think, for most people, into the game one postseason lineup for the Toronto Maple Leafs. What did you make of the decision by Jeannot, who obviously the Lightning have a ton invested in as far as the trade capital they gave up and hasn't exactly lived up to the billing? A guy who's scored 24 goals in 81 games with the Predators in 21-22 and only has 7 and now 70 games over 2 seasons with the Lightning.
Yeah, he's having a bit of a tough go at it. Still like the guy as a player. Questionable decision. Like I was keen on the replay just as the announcers were last night trying to figure out who kind of instigated that. And I think Revo said it after the game also that it was Tanner that asked him to go, which to me, you're up 3-1 in the defensive zone. Like that's probably not a spot where I'm asking one of the toughest guys in hockey for a scrap. But respect to him. And listen, Revo's come a long way. And I think it just shows, especially, you know, you can throw in Bert in that mix. You can throw in Max in that mix. It takes guys a while to get adjusted and acclimated. And he got it really hard, you know, from fans, media alike at the beginning of the year, and rightfully so. Like every time he stepped on the ice, it felt like he was getting a minus. But he's really turned into a guy that I not only think they want in the playoffs, but they need in the playoffs for their roster if they're going to play a team like the Panthers. But, you know, he showed again last night, especially in that scrap. I mean, I never, 11 years, we played a lot against each other and it never ended up happening for one reason or another, but he counters with the best of them. Like if you overextend on your punches, you can see he's very straight up and he times it perfectly. He almost knocked Tanner out a couple times. I think he got lucky to get away with what he did, which was still probably a TKO, but Revo's just so good at timing his punches and letting, you know, letting your right hand pass through and just using your, you know, kind of the same thing I did, using your torso to just absolutely unleash. And yeah, I think Tanner got away luckier than he actually did.
Yeah, he got sent to the room for a punch through the helmet. I can't ever recall seeing a guy, and it's like, to your point, it's Ryan Reeves. There's no shame in getting stunned by a lick from him, but I can't ever recall, like, I've seen guys get hit on the button and it stuns them and it drops them, and I've seen guys get dropped by shots to the side of the head, but that was a clean punch through a helmet and it stunned Janot in the way it did. I mean, again, you've been in a million scraps. I'm sure you've seen something like that before. That was the part of that that just was so jarring to me, is that it was a clean blow through the plastic and it still stung Janot the way it did.
Yeah, you know, earlier in the convo when I was talking about how I don't miss it, it's yeah. Like reasons like that you're describing is eating punches like that. I've felt, you know, I haven't been in or had to do concussion protocol because of a punch like that, but I've eaten a couple like that in my career, and it is not fun to take a licking like that. I had to do the concussion protocol, I think, once. I got absolutely pumped by Dustin Byfuglien with a hit coming the other way, a bit of a suicide pass, but never really seen it from a punch. We didn't really... I mean, this isn't funny, but we didn't really have to do that when I was younger, right? Like we could go toe to toe, whether it was me landing a clean licking on a guy or getting absolutely clocked by someone. There wasn't any concussion protocol when I was younger. So that's a newer thing, and I think it's a good thing. But yeah, Revo throws hard, really, really hard.
Yes, an intimidating fellow. Yeah, also an affable one, it seems like. But yeah, I think he's going to be in the lineup for game one of the postseason. As will Austin Matthews, 63 goals, 7 games to go before the game. Sheldon Keefe has to, you know, temper everybody's expectations as far as playing time, saying, hey, we know what the priorities are here, and it's not necessarily to get Austin Matthews 70 goals. That being said, like his teammates, and we've heard it explicitly from like Max Domi, we've also seen Max Domi like on a clear cut breakaway physically turn his head around and be like, is Austin Matthews like available for a pass here? Like how much of a conversation of a focal point is it within that dressing room, you think, to try and get Matthews to 70 or as close as they can to 70?
I mean, they'd be gunning for it for sure. If I put myself in that situation on that team, I think I'd be picking his brain always behind closed doors, whether it's in the dressing room or on a flight. Like, I think I'd be asking him about it, or maybe they're not. Maybe they're shying away from it, but I think I would be. It's definitely, you know, something that everybody's thinking about and would be thinking about at the time. And it's really special, man. I think I said this yesterday on radio too. I think every time he scores, we continually say, you know, he's on pace for this. Is he going to get 70? But I hope people are appreciating what he's doing at the same time. It is going very fast this season, and I feel like it has been. But 63, even in itself, for a calendar year in the National Hockey League is like, it's just, this is a historic stuff. And I know it's not the first time 60 has been done, but you don't see it very often, and the way he does it and the varieties in which he scores. And I just feel like he's been so good all year, and it's just been an absolute joy to watch. He's definitely given us some better feeling and some good things to talk about than, you know, those Jays or those Raps in the city like you guys were talking about before I got on. So I hope people are appreciating the run that he's on and not just looking for the next one and the next one, because this is pretty special.
Well, and, you know, I mean, I don't want to turn this into begrudging the other great players, but go look at all the guys that have scored 60 in this era. It's been guys who are, you know, not completely, but much more one-dimensional than Austin Matthews. I mean, we do the McDavid-Matthews thing all the time, and, you know, McDavid's such a singularly special talent, but we're not throwing him in the Selke conversation even, you know, sparingly like Matthews has been having it. That's the thing that jumps out to me, is that he has been able to do this and do it so consistently well. Oh God, I sound like Keith talking about Tavares now, but like never cheating the game, always being on the right side of the puck. That is the thing that I don't think we wholly appreciate enough. I think the fact that we're having back-to-back 60-goal seasons, people are kind of giving it its proper due, which, again, is an insane thing to say. But I think the part that actually kind of gets papered over is how... It doesn't get papered over how well-rounded his game is, but it does kind of get papered over that he's able to do that well being a 60-goal man twice.
No, it's incredible, man. And I think I was even of the mindset as he was coming up and as he started to score more, I almost had that mentality that I thought he was more one-dimensional. And I think as I got older and as my career started winding down and I'd retired and started watching hockey a little differently, I stopped kind of watching hockey and I started analyzing it. Like even before I started doing this analyst job was kind of ISOing on players. And I love watching the game. Like I love watching players away from the puck during the game. And so whether Austin has the puck or he doesn't, he's so fun to watch. And you can tell he takes pride in it. I think he's very kind of soft-spoken in interviews, but when people talk about stuff like that or ask him questions about that side of the game, you can tell that he takes a lot of pride in it. And I think that's really cool that he understands that he, you know, has to round out his game and be that type of player if this team wants to have any chance and if he wants to be a better player. So he's honestly one of the best in the league to do it. All his underlying stats and on the defensive side are incredible and towards the tops of the league. And he does it all, like from takeaways to being in good position to tracking to, like, I think he's almost as complete as he gets, and just an absolute joy to watch and to cover.
Yeah, he certainly is. We are a little up against it, so I'll need you to be a little bit quick with this one. But panic setting in Edmonton. I'm half joking, but they lost 5-0 to the Stars. Not the type of loss you want to see against a team like Dallas that, man, if there's an underrated team in this league, I do feel like it's the Stars. They got no due, given the fact, despite them just running away with the division. How is the reaction in Edmonton to that loss today, we think?
I got to call on Edmonton radio after this, so it's going to be panic city. Listen, I don't even think, like, my point about last night, I don't even think it was the Oilers were that bad. Yeah, they made some really bad decisions around the ice, but I think it was more a situation where Dallas was that good. Like, this team is absolutely rolling right now, and call them underrated, call them whatever you want, but people better not be sleeping on the Stars, because when Jake Ottinger's going like he was last night, they might be the best team in the Western Conference. They have no trouble scoring goals. And the Oilers didn't bring their A game in St. Louis or last night in Dallas. But I think it was more a case last night of the Stars were just unreal on both sides of the puck.
Yeah, the West playoffs are going to be a dogfight, as the Oilers right now locked into a matchup against the defending champs, which would be a heck of a first-round series. Luke, always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Anytime.
There's Luke Gazdick, Hockey Central analyst for Sportsnet, former NHLer, host of the Mitts Off podcast. And boy, the minor league life.
Yeah.
It's not that glamorous.
Yeah. I watched I watched one of his fights with McDermott there. It's just, again, like, it's not like Luke, like, it's not to say like he got the wheels beat off him, but it's just like, yeah, the guys are chucking. It seems such little fun.
Yeah. Now, you know, having spent some time in physical proximity to Luke.
Yeah.
It's jarring. Like that. Cause I've also been close to, like, physically intimidating people, right? Like, real scrappers. Like, Ryan Reeves is a large human.
Very.
You're next to Ryan Reeves, you're like, oh, that guy's, yeah. Probably don't want to get into a scrap. And not to say that I wanted to get into a scrap with Luke. But it's amazing that that guy carved out the career that he did and the intimidation factor that he did, not being, doesn't look like Alek Manoah.
No, he's kind of got the like NFL offensive lineman thing going for him, though. I forget exactly what the number is, but he talked about it, how he has dropped 20, 30 pounds from his playing days, and it was just he needed the beef to take hits and throw them. And I'm not talking about body checks. Like, yeah, it's jarring. He basically is the NHL's Joe Thomas, is what I'm telling you here. Just a shell of his former self. Not in terms of, like, you know, physically, but kind of. Like, in a compliment way is what I mean. Yeah. We love you, Luke. I'm sorry.
You thought you got sick of seeing the same teams over and over again in the North Division. Not you. You love the North Division. COVID was, like, your favorite time. You're like, can we go back? Where's the pandemic?
Honestly, it's like, I only talk to people on the golf course, and the Leafs just beat the wheels off everybody until the games mattered. It was great.
I had a different experience.
I know.
16 times playing your division rival over the course of, and I don't think the season's 82 games long in the American League, but
you get pretty sick of these guys.
All right. I'm going down to Rogers Center today.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have a full report on how the new cup holders look and how the new food tastes and maybe how the new drinks taste.
Save it. We got a whole show to plan around this for tomorrow.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow. Another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning.